Good afternoon. Welcome to Embracing the Chase, brought to you by InfinitelyHome.com, the website for first-time and affordable home buyers, Building Fortunes Radio, and Blog Talk Radio. Embracing the Chase is a radio show presenting a unique personal improvement thought which will make your life better and your business grow. How are you doing today? Today here in Florida, mud is the prevalent response. It's been raining for the past 40 days and 40 nights, and I honestly believe that Noah is just around the corner. It's going to be a tough day, and I have a pet, and taking that poor dog out in this weather, she does not want to go there. So we have to continually watch to make sure we catch her before the deed is done, if you know what I'm talking about. But on to the subject at hand. Our world around us is continuously growing and ever-changing, and the companies we create or work for are no different. If the rate of change around you exceeds the rate at which you change, there is a good possibility that you'll become irrelevant. And it's very important, in fact, it's vitally important, to continue to grow in order to keep up with the competition. And the competition might be the person sitting right next to you in your desk, or the lady that you have a crush on at the office. Whatever those facets are that keep you from getting to the next level, they're in your way. And no matter how much you like them, no matter how much you think they're worthy, you're more suited to what you need to accomplish, which is to move forward. So today we're going to talk a little bit about how to keep up. Make sure that you don't get yourself into a situation where you're the one who no longer has the position because you failed to keep up with what your company was doing. The biggest question that most entrepreneurs and people who work for companies, I call them intrapreneurs, have is how to stay relevant. That's where the professional growth plan can help. A professional growth plan is like a business plan. It's a written plan which helps you develop the skills and capabilities to contribute at a higher level. Essentially, it's like going back to school. If you remember when you were in high school, you had required courses and you had electives. When you went to college, you had a major that required so many courses. You probably had a minor, which also required course hours. And then you could take a couple of CAKE classes to keep your GPA up. And everybody's done that. Business is the same way. It's important for you to maintain a level of understanding about what your company is doing, what the people who have like jobs to you are doing, and how you maintain the level playing field so you can go forward. So you have some required education, which you have to do. And in addition, you have electives that can enhance the way the boss looks at you or can enhance your performance as an entrepreneur. And there are things that are sidelights. It's like, I'm doing right now affordable home ownership. But there's a plan now that was just enacted by Congress which says that people who work within a certain level and make a certain level of money get an automatic reduction in their interest rate on their mortgages because they make that money, and it's to help them save money. It's to help them increase their personal productivity wealth. And that's what home ownership does, and that's what saving money does. And so the government has enacted a program to reimburse lenders for those people when they reduce their interest rate by that half a point. seems like a very little bit of money, but you take a $100,000 loan at a half a point over 30 years, then it grows pretty much along the way. So that's something that you need to think about as you go. But anyway, you have to put in the time and the work to figure out where you want to be and the skills you need to take you there. And then you start creating your plan. And you start by organizing your thoughts and your goals. And you think of it like a business plan or a future resume. And you ask yourself these questions. What objective am I trying to receive, or objectives? Where am I trying to go? When do I want to get there, and how do I get there? So, the who, what, where, when, and how. Simple questions. And once you've thought of your goals in light of the business plan, think about how they translate to your calendar. Organize and prioritize your time so you can accomplish the goals even if you can't find the time to pour yourself into these tasks. Nothing will come if you don't. Nothing will come to fruition. You need to manage your time to the point to where you can accomplish your plan. And then you've got to set back and you've got to assess your plan. You got to take a look at three things which make it easy. And it's a time to pause, scratch your head a little bit, see if you're still on track. And there's a thing that you can do. It's called REP. And it's an easy way to evaluate your progress. REP stands for Relationships, Education, and Practice. And what it is that it lets you take a look at it from an 8,000-foot viewpoint. Looking down on it, you see all the things around it that are being affected. And you understand that as you do one thing, it affects it someplace else, and vice versa. And if you fail to do one thing, something doesn't get done. So the first thing is relationships. You ask, how am I connecting with the right people? Who else can I connect with? You need to connect with potential mentors or peers in your industry, or with people who have complementary skill sets. For example, if you're a graphic designer, you need to get to know a web designer, because that's the next step up the ladder for you. Right now, you do pieces of that puzzle. You want to do the whole puzzle. And so if you talk to a web designer, he's going to give you the way he looks at something. Does that make sense? Good. It should. Additionally, what you want to do is make sure that everything that you're doing follows the pattern. And the next piece in the pattern is education. You need to ask yourself, what are you learning? Have I received the certifications that I need? Education without application is just information. Reading is a huge part of education and growth. Here are a few things that you should look about as you do it. Take trade journals. Go to the library and take a topic that you're looking. I was watching a show last night, and there was this kid who couldn't decide what he wanted to do. And he knew what he was good at, and it was playing video games. But he wasn't educated enough to translate that skill set into a job until he met someone who was of like mind with him, had a relevant skill set, and she suggested that he ought to do it for a living if he was that good at it, because he had lied to her about what he was going to do in college. And so he figured out, wait a minute, she's made a good point here. And he did some research on his own and figured out that he could go to college and get a degree that was relevant to what he did and what he enjoyed, which was designing video games. Which means he was going to be a programmer. Okay. That's a relevant skill. And even if he goes beyond video games, he's using the skill set that he's really good at and he enjoys. You want to do the same thing. Make sure that your education reflects that. Make sure that what you do is all about who you are. I mean, I know what I need to do. I know as I go along, you know, what educations I need to apply each and every day to improve my standing with the people that I'm dealing with. And then you need to practice this new skill. You need to say, am I putting these new skills that I have to use? Practice means learning a new school and skill, and refining it in real time. So whatever you're doing isn't going to look perfect for a while, and that's the point. Expect things to feel awkward and uncomfortable. Maybe for a season, but stay in it, and you'll improve. Another important way to assess your plan is to solicit feedback. Ask from your peers or your boss, because when you humble yourself to continuously learn and strive to contribute above and beyond expectations, your value as a leader or a team member will be indispensable. And you cannot be considered irrelevant if you're indispensable. I can remember talking to my clients, and my question for them at the end of every session that I had was, how can I help you better? And many of them didn't have an answer, or many of them thought it was a trick question, but it wasn't. And when the few that said to me and gave me feedback, this is what I would really like from you, they were the ones who made the most progress, because it was a give and take. Your boss feels the same way. If you go to him and say, how can I do my job better? How can I make it easier for you to get to the next level so I can take your job? Those are the things that they want to hear from the people that are on their team. So you think about that during the commercial that we're going to take in a little bit. And in about 45 seconds, we'll talk about expanding on this process.
Do you want to learn more about affordable home ownership and what Ed Robinson with the National Affordable Home Ownership Coalition nonprofit has going on in the Sarasota, Bradenton, Florida area? Well, go to infinitelyhomes.com and read all about it. Don't forget to go to the events page for upcoming seminars in the area, and the newsletter can be found on the Home Sweet Home page. See you on the website, which once again is www.infinitelyhome.com.
Okay. You've done what I just said. A few months have passed. Your boss got promoted, and you took over. And you lead a team now. Congratulations. You know, whether it was an internal promotion or job change, managing people is an exciting and challenging next level in your career. And you may find yourself suddenly managing people you've worked with for years. Or you may be inheriting a completely unknown team. Either way, there are several things new leaders do well. they stay humble and they listen. You know, when you find yourself in charge of a team, it's tempting to come in with all guns blazing. Understandably so. You're passionate about this new role of yours, but too often, new leaders can let their well-intentioned passions get the best of them, and their desire to immediately start solving problems can be perceived as arrogant. You know, avoid any questions or statements that sound like, "Have you ever tried? Why aren't you doing it this way? Have you ever thought of? I have an idea that will fix all this. This process is broken and we need to fix it. I think this is inefficient." Yeah, it's your job to lead and tackle problems for your team, but before you lead, you do need to listen. 9 times out of 10, your team has already tried what you're suggesting and it didn't work for them. Or they know the process is broken, but they don't have the bandwidth to make it better. Or they're just as frustrated with inefficiency as you, but they've never before had a leader fight for what they needed. Stay humble and listen. Within 90 days, you'll have a better understanding of the past and present, and then you can begin solving for the future. Number 2, simply managing a team is a full-time job unto itself. But it probably isn't your only job. With your new role, you're probably busier than ever trying to support your team, but also working on your own projects. No matter how busy it gets, good leaders make time for their team members. There will be days when a fire happens and you need to cancel a one-on-one. But if that happens two or three weeks in a row, your problem might not be the fires. It might be prioritizing. Your team needs one-on-one time with you. A short while ago, I took a position that I thought was going to fit my needs and allowed me to do what I enjoy doing. And working with a person that I thought had relevant communication skills and that we could work together to make it happen. So we formed a collaboration in the hopes that we could accomplish the goals that he perceived I wanted to do and that I perceived he wanted to do. I thought they were the same thing. But he had failed to tell me that he had a hidden agenda. And as we got further along in the process, I began to see the pressures mount with him. And as I look back on it now, I should have been able to question him earlier in the process and save myself a lot of headache. But I didn't. And I ended up with a team of people who were extremely dissatisfied with the process, predominantly because they weren't getting paid, but also because we didn't have any direction, because I couldn't find the leadership that I needed from him when it came to financing. What I'd like to be able to do is for you to understand how this works best for you. To try to identify in your own mind what it's like to help you get to the next level when you do something. Maybe you've had this happen with your kids. Maybe you've had this happen with your significant other. I don't know. But you need to think about how it applies to you and what you need to do and how you set these people in your priority list, because it's very important. Had I kept him in my priority list the way I should, instead of being frustrated with the process, then I probably would have been able to discern what needed to be done to get us back on track. But I failed in that, and it's a regret that I'll have for quite a while. The next thing that good leaders do is that they celebrate the wins. Business is tough. We all have failures, but being a leader means having the insight into all the things that need to be fixed all the time. And it's easy to get that tunnel vision. But your team needs to see you do all the great things they're doing. Publicly shout out your team as often as you can. Give them affirmation that all their hard work is not going unnoticed. One of the things I learned working with the crews that build houses is that when the boss comes in, they want to know that you see that they're doing their job. And so no matter who I had in the crew, and no matter what that crew was doing, I tried to go in and make a comment about a new floor system that was being installed. You know, windows that were being moved, painting that was being done. Even when we were in the process of tearing everything down so that we could get it back to square one and begin from there. You know, I made sure that they understood that I knew that they were hard working. And then I also made sure that they knew what the next win was and what it could be if they did their job right, so that they had a goal to shoot for too. Because in any project where a team is involved, you have team goals, you have personal goals, and you have company goals. All of those things are on your plate as the leader. Also, a leader knows when to step up and also when to back down. Because as a leader, it is your job to block and tackle for your team. When they're having process roadblocks or issues with another department or are lacking the tools they need to do your job, it's time for you to step up and fight their battles for them. On the other hand, there are times when you need to back off and let them handle their own issues, like personnel conflicts or facilitating chaotic meetings. They need to be protected, but they also need to experience opportunities to grow. And when it's a situation they need to manage on their own, meet with them to prepare and coach them, then meet with them afterwards and celebrate the win. It's important that they know that being on your team is the best of all possible worlds. One of the things that I didn't do and one of the things that I thought I should have done better was when I was building an organization of people, I didn't like training. Training for me was a waste of time. Let's get out in the field and make things happen. Get to the next step in the process. That was bad management skills on my part. I used to shove my people off on my superior, who spent a lot of time and effort on training. But, you know, I lost my relationship with the people in my organization. Instead of them respecting me for what I was teaching them and what they were learning from me, they failed. Every one of the people in that organization failed. They're no longer with the company. They're off doing something else. Because I didn't do the job that I was supposed to do. That's a hard thing to swallow when you're a leader. A harder thing to swallow at the end of the day when you're no longer the leader and you realize what you could have accomplished. Finally, Good leaders give constant and consistent feedback. In the simplest terms, a team member should never be shocked by a bad annual or mid-year review. And a well-performing team member should never be nervous for an annual or mid-year review. Your team should be getting consistent feedback from you, positive or negative. They should know exactly where they stand at all times. If you reach a point where you're considering firing someone and they have no idea, that's on you. Period. The idea of hiring your own team is so exciting to new leaders. But trust us when we tell you that hiring well is one of the toughest parts of leadership. Unfortunately, there's a high chance you'll get burned at some point in your career. A person can interview incredibly well and end up being a horrible team fit or major underperformer. You won't know how to hire well until you start doing it, but just know that it is both an art and a science, harder than you expect, and something you should absolutely never rush. When you're in sales, sales is a numbers game. Especially when you're in direct sales and there are no salaries to support you, you feel a pressure on you to produce, to bring that money in, to get to the point to where you're building an organization that, quote unquote, you can make money with. Because generally, if you're in a direct sales organization and you're in a position of leadership, you're getting an override on what the people produce underneath you. And the whole point in the process of hiring someone to work underneath you is that ultimately, you don't have to do the direct selling anymore. You have one person, two people, five people, whatever. You have those people that are producing for you and generating the income that replaces the income you made. And ideally, that's how it works. But I will tell you right now, and I hope you learn this lesson if you don't learn anything else from me. If you have a good producer in the field, and they are producing at a level that makes you comfortable, and you know they're maxed out, but they're your number one producer, don't put them in management. Increase their commission rate. Do whatever you need to do as far as bonuses to get them into a position to where they're happy where they are. Because the worst thing a company can do, and frankly they do it all the time, is to take their best salesman and move them into management. Not only do they put someone who is not capable of being a manager in that position because he is a self-starter and doesn't wait for other people, he also wants to stay where he is. He's got his life mapped out. He knows what he can make. And he can stay right there and do it. And instead of that, they've put him in a place that he never should be. Well, that's about it for today. We're going to get set here and get soaked. Probably need an ark or at least a kayak to get to the grocery store. So I owe you more time tomorrow, which I'll bring to you something new. So have a good evening. I hope you don't get wet. This is Ed Robinson signing off.